On this episode of the podcast, I have with me Jason Ash. He is the chief of data at Symetra. We're going to be talking about transformation within the insurance industry. It's a very interesting dynamic relationship between business and technology. We're going to be talking about stakeholders. I see individuals who actually are really pivotal in how these solutions are being rolled out. I think Jason's going to talk to us about, you know, the non-technical side of the business and how they help with contributing. And I think that's going to be interesting because I think maybe it's going to transcend just what the insurance industry is doing. Jason, I'm super excited and grateful for your time. Thank you.
Thanks, Amir. Really excited for the chat.
Awesome. So Symetra, tell us what you guys do before we start.
Great. We are an insurance company. We sell several different types of insurance. We sell traditional life insurance policies that protect you, provide a beneficiary, provide payments to a beneficiary. We sell retirement products like annuities that are linked to performance of the stock market. And we also sell what are called group benefits products, which is an employer product. So for example, we are the insurance company behind the benefits that maybe your employer offers you. So it's a wide range of products. Relative to our size, we're a fairly small, kind of small to medium sized insurance company. So we offer what I consider to be a wider range of products kind of per employee compared to many of the other insurance companies that might be out there.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, it's a heck of an industry. It's massive. Technology obviously is a core. I know we're going to be talking about, some more the nitty gritty of how the relationship works, but obviously you have the business side, you have the technology side, and every company, insurance industry companies included, is trying to drive better outcomes, leverage technology to improve the bottom line, obviously. When it comes to the insurance industry and what you've seen, that relationship between technology and business, how does that partnership work?
It works to varying degrees, depending on the company. If it helps, I'd like to kind of take a step back and talk about my background and kind of where I come from on this, because it's been really fascinating for me, particularly as it relates to this challenge of how technology can be adopted more by business teams. I started my career as an actuary. For those of you that don't know, actuaries are the group of people that help an insurance company calculate risk, exposures. They're the ones that price insurance products, making sure that the products that we offer to policyholders will be sustainable. So likely that the insurance company will be able to pay those claims potentially decades into the future. So it's a lot of risk and math and probability. Actuaries tend to be fairly like ingenuitive, I would say. They tend to come up with their own solutions. And the classic dilemma in insurance is that sometimes those solutions are at odds with maybe what we would consider to be technology best practices. I think one of the classic examples is that actuaries have built probably more access databases than any other group of people. And sometimes that solves their immediate problem, but it creates challenges around standard practices. So I started my career as an actuary, and I'm happy to go into this later, but for various reasons, I knew that my real passion was in software development, engineering, and data. So I feel like I've really experienced kind of both sides. I can see the perspective of the business from the various business teams, including the actuarial teams, as well as the technology side, what you learn from software development best practices. So an area that I am very passionate about and that I try to think about a lot is how do you get these two groups of people to see eye to eye? What can they learn from each other? And how does that lead to effective business outcomes?
I guess, before we talk about that relationship, maybe just another question about your background. As you kind of, as an actuary and obviously you're straddling that fine line between technology, business, and obviously instrumental and a lot of the core components of an insurance company. As you kind of gone through and now you are more on the technology side and you have had that exposure to business, has that really changed your view of that relationship?
Absolutely. for better and worse. You know, I have good examples. I have like positive takeaways. And I have things that I wish would change. I find that my background makes it a little bit easier for me to see where people are coming from. So I can see, let's say, the challenges that an actuarial team is facing and getting the data that they need and working with it without feeling like they're being held up by what they consider to be maybe like onerous IT practices. And then I can also see the perspective of our technology teams who are, you know, trying their very best to make sure that customer data is protected and that, you know, we're not duplicating things and how frustrating it can be sometimes if you have a group of people that are off doing their own thing. And sometimes you get people that can see that perspective, and that's where you tend to make a lot of progress. And other times, you know, it's really hard. And what I really think it comes down to is communication. How well are business teams communicating with their technology counterparts? Is there trust there? And in particular, in my role, I have the benefit of overseeing a team that includes people from both sides of that. So I have actuaries on my team. I have data scientists, data analysts. I have analytics engineers. And all those people, I think, represent more of the business perspective. I also have data engineers, software developers, and they represent more of the technology perspective. But we're all one team. So the challenge and the opportunity that we have is working together effectively, which is basically what I consider to be my job. Is how do we work together effectively as a team representing those perspectives? And then therefore bring our successes to the business, you know, at large.
Absolutely. I guess just maybe a slight diversion, but a curiosity. You see a lot of industries where data science first, data first approaches are coming into play, productizing data. Even within legacy industries and companies, they're having to rethink the role of what they did, the role of technology. And it's not just the business coming up with revenue opportunities, business lines. You have data scientists who are proposing, you know, new features, new models that are going to increase the bottom line. And you're seeing that dynamic shift. Obviously, we talk about digital transformation a lot. That's maybe even slightly different than this. But we're, you know, I had a guest on previously, I think a couple of years ago. I said, maybe data science is the new MBA because, you know, everyone's trying to find a way to take their business and make more money. What if data scientists can actually leverage the data and help you make more money? It's possible. Are you seeing a shift in thinking of how the insurance industry views technologists from, hey, you guys facilitate and prop up the business to, hey, you guys actually might drive some revenue and not just be viewed as a cost center?
Yeah, that's a complicated question. There's a few kind of like sub questions that I think you're really asking there. So first, let's validate the assumption that's actually true. Like, and I think it is. So I think from my observations of the work that we do, we get better outcomes when we have more perspectives represented in the people that are thinking about them. So if I bring a team of data engineers to solve a problem and only data engineers, I can kind of tell you, you know, what solution they're likely to come to, and it will have certain strengths and it will have certain weaknesses. And if I bring a team of data scientists, it'll be the same thing. They'll come up with solutions that have strengths and weaknesses. When you add more of those perspectives together, I think the strengths and weaknesses tend to balance out and you get better ideas. More heads thinking about a problem generally tends to be good. So yes, like our team's attitude toward this is that we want to get more perspectives involved to be thinking about it. And I think that's not a surprising thing. I don't think anybody would really disagree with that. And I think as an industry, the insurance companies agree. I think the challenge is actually making it happen. The practical realities of running into like time constraints and deadlines and how do you prioritize fixing things like technical debt? That I think is where the struggle is. I think if you just asked an abstract question of like, you know, can data be a revenue driver for insurance? Most of the people that I work with would say yes. Then I think the real difficulty is figuring out, okay, well, how do we make that happen? What does that actually look like? And so that's where I spend a lot of my time is thinking about how do we create the time and space to change that perception and really prove it through work and projects that we take on. So it's a lot of advocacy. It's a lot of thinking about that and working with our partners to find those applications that are really going to prove out that case. And so yeah, we could talk about a few examples of those that might illustrate the point.
Yeah, I guess in a question, and I have no idea what the timeline is, but out of curiosity, and if you don't know, that's fine. When it comes to insurance companies and rolling out a new product, what are the typical timelines, and how involved is the technology side, and how early do they get involved in something like that?
Rolling out products in insurance is typically fairly slow for a few reasons, but it's a more nuanced question. So there are things that you have to think about when you roll out a new insurance product. Probably the number one that comes to mind are regulatory concerns. So insurance is a heavily regulated industry, and for good reason. I think that we really want to make sure that pricing is fair and equitable. We want to make sure that products aren't too complicated for people to understand, so it's still valuable but understandable. And every state in the United States has a regulatory body that considers new products as they're launched, and in some cases they review them in great detail or maybe a little bit less. But if you are proposing a brand new product in the insurance space, it can take maybe 6 to 12 months, I would say, is like a pretty good timeline to launch a brand new product. However, the typical pace of product development, I think, is iteration on existing products, which can be a little bit faster. So to give you some perspective, I think in 2022, in our retirement group where we sell various types of annuities, we launched 6 new products that year. We were able to do 6 new products that year because most of them were kind of like tweaks on existing products. And I don't say that to imply that they're not useful additions. It's things like adding new investment options for people. Part of the attractiveness of some of our products is that they protect you if the market drops. So we have various features in place to provide some guarantees if you're invested in the market in some way and the market falls. And so we can adjust kind of those features a little bit to respond to demand that we see on the market. And we don't have to go through quite that full review. So product development takes a wide array of shapes and sizes, but a product that we're working on now, which is quite a bit different, it's a rider to give you a benefit if you're diagnosed with cancer. That's a fairly new kind of substantively different feature from products that we offer today. And so that has to go through a bit more of a regulatory review. And we think about it a lot more from a pricing perspective. And so it takes a bit longer.
I guess you mentioned on your team, you have a number of different people, and obviously within the collaboration of maybe even one of these products that you're mentioning, I'm assuming you have to have a nice variety. You mentioned regulatory, obviously. I'm sure the actuaries come into play somewhere. How I guess when you look at the matrix nature of these solutions, where does technology jump in? Where does that starting point for them begin?
The funny thing is, I think if you asked people in data or technology, like, where does the journey begin for you, they would always say, like, too late. We're never involved early enough. I get that from all of my direct reports kind of all the time. So, well, I wish I had been involved earlier in whatever process. And I generally agree. I think that sometimes we prioritize, let's say, like the features of a product or developing the marketing of the product or the product features as a first step, and then kind of think about the data or the implementation second. And to some extent, you can rationalize that. You have to actually like figure out what the product is going to do, to justify whether you're going to invest more time in it. But I think the real opportunity for insurers is thinking about data early. And like you said before, thinking about it not as like a cost or an implementation detail of offering a product, but thinking about it as a value add for customers, or a potential to improve the understanding of how the product is working from our perspective. So one thing that I'm really happy about with our team is that several of the leaders that I manage are members of the leadership groups of the divisions of our company that are responsible for creating those products. So we have a retirement division, a life division, a group benefits division, and a few of the managers that report to me sit on the leadership teams of those divisions. So they're plugged in really closely to the, you know, the 2024 priorities of those divisions, to the goals, the challenges, and they're there to be able to offer their perspective on, you know, data and analytics early. And they learn about the business context just alongside of everybody else. And that has been hugely transformational in allowing us to kind of partner and view data as an asset and a partnership rather than, you know, like something that you think about later as an implementation detail.
I guess kind of what I'm hearing is you almost have that cultural, that champion component to the solution where you really are looking for people. You need adoption. You want people to, you know, obviously find the solution, helping them, and these champions are out there. When you're kind of looking at the role, and maybe I'm labeling for you, sorry if I am, but these non-technical participants within the process, as they are kind of partnering with you and you're working with them, I think you'd mentioned having them contribute and help the technical team and kind of making sure that they are providing their value to the technical team in a different way. Maybe you can kind of expand on that a little bit.
Sure. I mean, this isn't like specifically related to the product development process, but I'm very proud of how we have kind of developed this process as a team. So let me take a step back from kind of the theme that we were talking about for a moment and like actually focus on what I think addresses your question. You know, we do a lot of work in our data warehouse, and I will absolutely give a plug to DBT. I'm not like sponsored or anything by DBT, but it has been transformational for us in the way that we work with data. You know, one place to kind of store our documentation and build our data models like a software project. So it's just been fantastic. It has really taken the work of data engineering and analytics engineering literally out of people's like local computers, where a lot of that used to happen in the past. And it's brought it into this shared context that we all have. And, you know, obviously that's writing code, and it is technical work. But our implementation of DBT at our company, I measure, you know, one of the metrics of measuring the success of that project is how many people are contributing to it. How many people have committed a line of code or more to this repository? When we started the project 3 years ago, we had, I wrote the first line of code with a colleague, and we had about 5 contributors in the first year. The next year, we had 15. The year after that, we had 30. And this year, we've gone just past 60. So over the past 3 years, we've doubled the number of people that have contributed code to our data warehouse. And I say code, but this could include SQL code, documentation, you know, really their knowledge of products and features and how it's encoded in the data. But the really fascinating thing to me about this is that half of those 60 contributors are not on my team. They're not on the data team. They come from all other areas of the business. And in some cases, it's people that didn't know how, you know, what Git was. They didn't know how to write code. They kind of knew the business problem that they understood. So we've trained them, we've onboarded them, kind of given them a set of guidelines and helped them get started. And what's fascinating is that we can't really predict who's going to be a great contributor to the repository. Sometimes it's people that you never would have expected that just gravitate toward this, and it really solves a problem that they had. So that's my very long-winded answer of saying that we have made a technical approach accessible to people in a way where it's like a lower barrier to entry. And that has been remarkably effective in getting us broader participation in data. It's just been amazing to see.
When you look at the conversation with stakeholders to kind of have them understand the role of people that will be on their teams, you're going to possibly need some of their time and resources. How did that conversation look? As obviously, you know, no one necessarily wants to, you know, divert, you know, resources, but obviously it seems like it's a really good relationship. So something had to have gone really well in that conversation.
Yeah, it tends to be, you know, a very like a collaborative discussion about the benefits and the trade-offs. So I would say that it generally doesn't follow the pattern of us saying, hey, like, you have to work with data in a different way. You have to do it the way we're doing it. And to comply, you need to devote 2 people over the next 6 months. It never looks like that. Instead, we often have business teams that approach us and they say, hey, we've got this problem, or this is really frustrating for me. Can you help? Do you have a way to help me with this? And the way that we typically handle that is we give the person to the team. So it's actually the opposite, where we try to collect all these business problems across the company. And when we find one that we think is a good enough use case, that has some measurable ROI that we think is attractive enough, we will actually do what we call a mentorship. So we'll partner somebody on my team with that person from the business team, really try to understand their problem, understand which of the products and services my team offers that can help. So one of those might be like DBT and the data warehouse, or another one might be our centralized operational data store. Kind of have this like catalog of services and capabilities that we offer, and we sit down with them and discuss how they can directly contribute and solve their own problems. So it kind of verges on the self-service model, but it's really like we offer this centralized platform and the training to help those teams get up to speed. So for them, the value proposition is that they solve their own problem, they train their people at the same time. And of course, they have to figure out, the time and space to do that. But generally, they find that worthwhile. So yeah, I haven't actually found it to be like too much of a challenge, generally speaking, because those teams have reached a point where they know they need help and we're there to help.
Are you guys finding any use cases where you're getting similar type requests and you guys are creating other collateral, maybe videos or tutorials to kind of help with that? Or is it all done pretty much ad hoc based on maybe the business need or business problem?
Yeah, I think maybe part of the way to answer that is to talk about like the onboarding process. So I think a lot about that. One of the things that we've done as a team, every time a new person on my team joins, we have them submit a couple of pull requests to our major repositories. We have a Python monolith and we have our DBT repository. And one of the ways that I was measuring if we were doing a good job of providing a good new user experience is seeing how fast people could complete that pull request, which means they've got to install all the software. So our systems have to be set up to make that easy to do. They have to be able to find where these repositories are, get access to them. They have to, in most cases, people hired onto my team, they don't have to necessarily learn a lot of the software development skills. That comes from their prior work. But what that has looked like on our team is a couple of things. One is really good documentation. Documentation is never perfect. We always have room to improve, but I think we have a great set of wikis and kind of getting started guides to get people up to speed. A little bit of it is tooling. So we've built some internal tooling to just help people get up to speed a little faster, things to install software kind of a little bit easier than they would otherwise. Really like step-by-step guides. And then we have a culture that I'm very proud of, which is where it is a priority to kind of take time out of what you're doing and help somebody else. People take the time to do that. They, receive that if they need it. So it's just this very collaborative, and we really take it seriously that it's a good investment of your time to help somebody else. So that is very fun to see that, anytime somebody has a question, they, go to chat and ask a question, they almost instantly get help, or they almost instantly get somebody on the phone to help them. So from that perspective, we found it, pretty, we've made it easy to get new people onboarded and kind of help them with the specialized attention that they need, whether it's, committing code or getting software installed. That has made a big difference for us.
I mean, I think that's pretty, pretty great. And I think, the one thing I was thinking about and when we're talking about product development, we're talking about actual technology solutions. I guess the expectation of stakeholders, and I know we talked about time to make, to deliver a product. When it comes to expectations and delivery, data obviously has sometimes a challenge. Executives and stakeholders want those data solutions very quickly because they need to make decisions. Your job requires a lot of that, you know, typical iceberg image. You see a lot of stuff happens below the water outside of that visual they get. When you're looking at the, you know, that stakeholder expectation, and that's why I was curious about product development, how long it takes, because I was curious, you know, are the stakeholders patient with solutions? Because I think the software side, people realize it's software engineering. There is a process, there's a life cycle, there's a QA, and I think there's a built-in expectation that a solution won't be here in 2 weeks. Data, there's a, hey, I can do this in Access or Excel tomorrow. Why am I going to wait 6 months for you to build all the infrastructure so I could get that one report I could have done? I mean, you're guilty of it too. In Access, I'm just kidding with you. But that's been a question I've been asking a lot of data leaders, because I find it, you know, the ultimate question that I'm really getting at is data has this view of being reactive. And I know we're trying to go to self-service to be proactive and go, hey, here's all these tools we have. But invariably, if anything new has to be built, that expectation of a stakeholder will have to be worked with.
Yeah, I mean, that's an amazing question, because it really is what we grapple with a lot. And there's a few things that I kind of took out of there. So one is you kind of implied that there's a lot of work that goes on underneath the surface. When a senior leader of the company is talking about the initiatives that they want to achieve next year, I never hear Snowflake. I never hear operational data store. Not a chance. But of course, you know, we need that to achieve what they're talking about. So I think one of my goals is to find the time, you know, as we're baking in the estimates for how long it's going to take to do those things, to really think about, you know, how we can achieve the goal while also building something that's likely to be useful, you know, down the road in other areas. And I'm in the fortunate position now. I've been in this role and working at Symetra for 3 years. Over that time, kind of had responsibility to oversee larger and larger teams. 3 years ago, you know, we had essentially none of this infrastructure. We weren't using dbt. We had kind of like a hodgepodge of data warehouse like things that people were pulling together. Then it was difficult to say, okay, you know, how long is it going to take to do xyz, because we didn't have a lot of that infrastructure. So we didn't have a lot to build on, but we really tried to focus on compelling use cases that would be good for the business and allow us to build this foundational infrastructure at the same time. And, you know, through like great business partner champions that were willing to kind of see that long-term goal and say, yeah, I can see what you want to build. You've kind of brought me along. I know that this immediate thing that I'm asking for is going to take a little bit longer because you want to do some of this foundational work, but I know that's going to benefit me in the future. So working with a partner like that who can really see why we would be doing this was amazing, hugely impactful for us. And as a result, over the 3 years that I've been here, we have been able to build that platform so that now any sort of marginal new initiative that we have is a lot easier because of this tooling. But I think about it in terms of this maturity curve, that when you're brand new, you have to be much more selective about your projects. You have to choose to work with the people who are your most passionate advocates, because they will give you the time and space to be able to do what you know you need to do long term. We are now at the stage of maturity where, you know, we kind of need to figure out how to scale. So we've got good processes in place. We've got a decent platform in place. We always want to improve it, but we need to think about how to scale. How do we get more people using the platform? How do we make it easier for people to contribute? So that's kind of the first aspect of your question, is like, think about where you are on the maturity scale, how fast you need to scale versus what you need to build. The second part of your question was, you know, how do you think about like data delivery timelines? And this is one where I encourage us to think like software engineers. I think, you know, I still today get partners from the business that talk about big bang launch in April 2024. We're going to have all our data on Salesforce, whatever. You know, it's all not going to be there from January, February, March. And then all of a sudden on April 1st, like there, all the data suddenly appears and we're ready to go. And we've learned in the software development space, that's not the right way to work on projects. The right way to work on projects is to think about small incremental delivery, where every single thing you do adds incremental value. And so I try, you know, as a leader of my team to get my team leads to advocate for that approach with the business, is to say, great, you've got a huge deadline on April 1st. Wonderful. We're going to give you the first 10% of data in the first half of January. And I want you to start using it right away. I want you to tell me everything that's wrong with it. And what we do alongside that is build monitoring tools and kind of like, basically, how can we collect feedback and respond to that feedback as early as possible so that we don't have this big bang launch in August when, of course, the data is not going to be totally fit for purpose. Of course, it's going to have, you know, gaps and it won't be perfect quality. But if we can set the expectation and kind of bring our stakeholders along every month of that project, then they're better prepared for it. They kind of know, you know, where the gaps and where the strengths of that will be. So that's been important for us, is to try to shift that expectation of like the big bang release to incremental releases over time.
I love it. I think it's a super interesting industry where technology is making headway. Not only that, you have startups that are coming in to compete with maybe different technology tool sets, but then they don't have as much data. And I think it's a really interesting, I mean, I'm not sure what'll happen 5-10 years from now, because obviously with, and we haven't talked about AI amazingly, we did a whole show without actually talking about
it. I know,
that.
It's crazy.
don't know how that happened, but I do think it's interesting because, you know, having a modern, you know, tech stack, modern infrastructure, data first versus having a ton of data, I think that's going to be a really interesting battle within two industries, specifically insurance and healthcare. And I think what's gonna come about, I have no clue, but I think it's gonna be interesting because it's gonna be a point in which side can take advantage of those strengths faster and iterate more quickly.
Yeah, I think that is the classic battle. Like, startups have the advantage of speed. I've worked at a couple of startups. We said that every single day. We said the only thing we have going for us is speed. We can move faster. And so we have to think about how to maximize that advantage. Now with AI, you know, the thing that I worry about is that we won't be able to move fast enough in adopting new technology. Will we be safer about adopting new technology than a lot of other companies? Like, probably. And then, you know, that has advantages, but the risk is that we might just get left behind. So that's certainly something we think about, is how do we responsibly move as fast as we can as a team? And yeah, it's going to be amazing to see what the next few years to bring. I think our work is going to look completely different in, you know, 3 to 5 years. So I just want to make sure that we're prepared for it with some foundational skills on the team and the ability to, you know, take responsible risks as a company.
Final question. I'm just kind of curious about this. Obviously, engineering itself, software engineering, I should clarify, software engineering has a different connotation, different expectation, different timelines we've been talking about. Within data, I've mentioned to a lot of hiring managers that to me, a data engineer is really a software engineer specialized in data. I kind of look at machine learning engineers as a software engineer specialized in ML model development. And I think part of me thinks that way because maybe I'm recognizing or thinking about this as teams are being built, that tech data has become so complex. It's no longer, hey, I can just put SQL Server on my laptop and run everything. You know, software engineering got fractured that way, and there's specialized skills all across. And now we're seeing that happen in data very quickly. Data scientists have to, every analyst needs to know Python. Is there an alignment that we're going to start seeing potentially in the future? Or is it necessary, is the question, of becoming more like the software engineering side, where we start using those labels to imply different things within the role, the different complexities and potential fact that some of this stuff is really not software engineering, but just specialized to the data team?
There's so many ways to answer that, but I'll give you an example. One of my goals for the team was to provide like clear career paths for everybody on the team. And when you have a team comprised of data scientists, analytics engineers, data analysts, data engineers, okay, that becomes a challenge. Like, what does it look like to advance in your career as a data engineer? And how does that compare and contrast with your ability to advance as an analytics engineer. So we spent a long time working on job descriptions to try to capture the nuances there. But I think at the end of the day, like maybe to oversimplify just a little bit, if you were to design a Venn diagram of the overlap of skills between a software engineer, a data scientist, a data analyst, an analytics engineer, and a data engineer, there's significant overlap in my experience. What's been really cool about leading this team is that I think this actually provides opportunities for people to really gravitate toward their strengths. We have had examples of people that have come in and I've hired them as data scientists. And it turns out that they just have an aptitude and a natural kind of inclination toward building platforms, which is much more of actually a software engineering skill set, but maybe kind of veering toward data engineer. So the fact that we have all of these diverse skills and a rich set of problems to work on allows people to kind of play to their strengths, which in my opinion is a very effective way to run a team rather than kind of putting people in boxes and saying, you know, this is what you do. So I think it's interesting for me to see, you know, the convergence. I like to focus on the commonality between all of these. Like, I think we can learn a lot from software development, things like unit testing. You know, can we, you know, dbt has a great framework for testing data, and that's really a concept that I think is borrowed from software development. But I think something that I think is funny is, you know, some people will say that a software program is just data and functions. So when you talk about data engineering, like, yeah, you know, we're working with data, lots of it, but we write functions on that data, we move it around, we transform it a little bit, then we kind of share it. And so there's a lot that I think we can focus on and learn from other disciplines.
Awesome, man. Jason, I know you're busy. Thank you for your time. I know we covered a lot within the insurance space and a few things outside of it. I love your background being a little bit atypical. Might attract some people as well to ask you some questions. But if somebody does want to reach out to you, what's a good way of touching base with you?
Oh, absolutely. You can find me on LinkedIn. It's pretty easy to find me there. Feel free to reach out via email. My email is jason.ash@sinetra.com. I have a personal website. It's pretty easy to find, and you can reach out to me in several different ways. I love talking about all this stuff. You know, if you're curious and passionate about data, chances are we'll have a great conversation just like this one. I just really enjoyed it. It was great to talk to you.
Awesome, man. Yeah, well, likewise, super, time's flown by. I'm like, I got to let this guy get back to work. Otherwise, I'll keep talking to him. Then we'll make sure we include some of those links in the show notes. Again, thanks for being on. That's it for the episode. Be back again. Different guests, different topic. Always two things. One, share this episode. I really think the insurance industry is fascinating. I'm sure there are other people that can listen, learn, and enjoy it as well. So please share the episode like you guys do every week. Secondly, like, subscribe, comment, leave a review. Let me know how we're doing. I've always wanted to improve. Until next time, thanks and goodbye.